Hey everyone, this is Stevie Richards from DDP Yoga, and you're listening to Gerwick Report Podcast with Steve Gerwick and Frank D.
Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. I am Steve Gerwick of Gerwick.net, G-E-R-W-E-C-K.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. Another edition of the Gerwick Report podcast. Let's say hi to my tag team partner, Frank D.
Hey, what's going on, everybody out there? You can subscribe to our official YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast. Interviews up there right now with Vince Russo, Teddy Long, Ron Simmons, just added Ricardo Rodriguez, and soon to be added Eric Bischoff. But Steve, we got a very special guest today, don't we?
We absolutely do. Going over his resume here, former ECW wrestler, WWF, WCW, was recently in TNA, as an instructor for DDP Yoga, and is a tech guru. Today I welcome Stevie Richards. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry about the commotion in the background, but we're currently just setting up to have the guys leave for Slam Dance with the Jake the Snake Roberts movie that they're all getting ready to go out there and cover.
That's no problem at all. In fact, let's start right here with what's currently going on with DDP Yoga, how you got affiliated with DDP Yoga, and how's everything going with that?
Well, you know, DDP and I have been friendly or friends since before I was in WCW, because he was a major part of creating the Raven character back in ECW, him and Jake Roberts. So, you know, I got to talk to him a few times via Raven, but never really met him until WCW, when we got to work some Saturday nights and Nitro, and got to know him. And, you know, didn't really get to know him that time around, but in WWE, when the WCW invasion stuff happened, and then after that he came in, it was, you know, got to be a little more familiar with him and see how positive of a guy he is. And he was just starting. It wasn't even DDP Yoga. It was just in its infancy. You know, and he was just trying to rehab all the injuries he got from professional wrestling. And then we just kept crossing paths. And he noticed that I was very into fitness and very into learning new things and new ways to up my fitness level. And, you know, he preached to me, like, about the DDP Yoga, and just like any guy who's ever done yoga, just like he says, he wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga, and he means it. It's just like, it's more of a necessity, and that's we were talking before the podcast started. Nobody ever volunteers to say, hey, I want to do DDP Yoga. They always say, oh, I'll try it, I'm thinking about it, this and that. It's like a last resort, but once you get started with it, it's addictive. You know, Jericho talked about in his interview on DDP's YouTube channel, saying if he doesn't do it in a couple of days, he feels like crap. He's got to get back. He's got to keep up with it every single day. But DDP Yoga, you know, it went from, much like anything else, I wanted to be a wrestler. I really wanted to apply myself, and I took it as far as I could for as long as I could. Still continue to wrestle sometimes. But with DDP Yoga, once I found out, wow, this is helping me with all the injuries I have, with all the things that I thought would always be painful and limiting in my everyday life, you know what? I want to get certified. I want to be a full-time part of this. I want to take this all the way as far as I can take it. And he recently, actually, about a year and a half ago or almost 2 years ago, got certified. Then in December, I officially came on board as a full-time member of the DDP Yoga team and helping to put together and open up the first DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. That was an earful, wasn't it?
That's right. And how is Jake the Snake doing these days?
He's doing great. He's doing great. Jake is, you know, the movie, I got to go to a private screening not too long ago, and I have to tell you, and there's an even better version because I got to really tweak it and do a lot of it and get feedback from the people that were in the audience. It's amazing, you know, and everybody knows it's been well documented ad nauseum how the low of Jake the Snake Roberts, part of that documentary, The Resurrection of Jake Roberts, is very low. You know, TMZ, all that other stuff. That it's a very honest movie, and he wanted it that way. But he's doing great now. He's down to almost his WWF weight. Not quite there. We're working on that, but he is making progress. He's feeling great. He's about to turn 60 years old, I believe. So I think he looks the best he's looked in probably 10, 15 years.
Yeah, we had him on the podcast a couple months ago, and he was touring around the country and going, I think he was going to Canada, and he's keeping busy, which is great to hear.
Yeah, there's the next step. I mean, you talk about he's probably the busiest guy in wrestling outside of Triple H, but he just recently had a premiere for his Unspoken Word tour. And I mean, if you've ever seen a Jake Roberts promo, it's basically what I based the Dr. Stevie character on, because everybody always yells and screams. And I love the fact when I was a kid that Jake Snake Roberts never raised his voice, but drew me in, creeped me out, did whatever he wanted. He played with people's minds through that camera. And to hear those stories told by Jake the Snake Roberts in Jake's unique delivery, I definitely recommend anybody go out there. He'll be all over the country. I mean, I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure on social media you can find his schedule and see. Or maybe you can attach it to the show notes if you can.
So Jake has lost all this weight. You say he's back down to almost his WWF weight. He's lost all this weight doing the DDP yoga program, huh?
It's more than just the program. It's the lifestyle. It's eating. It's eliminating all the junk and the GMOs and the you know, obviously the fast food and the crappy food and all that stuff. But, you know, he's living gluten-free now, dairy-free, and it makes a huge difference. And then there's the training, the DDP yoga workout. And the system is just is amazing. You know, what you see on the DVDs is not going to be anything compared to what we're going to bring with the app. There's going to be an app coming out this year, which is going to have customized workouts. It's instead of just having 11 or 12, it's going to have hundreds up there on demand. Wow. And it's going to be pretty amazing.
Now, DDP, of course, has also helped Scott Hall. Have you had much interaction with Mr. Hall?
Yeah. I've seen Scott. I've seen him before he left for Raw. He was just on Raw Monday. He looked great. And he's loving life. I mean, it's just like, you know, Scott appreciates pretty much everything in life. I could tell, you know, something as simple as he goes for a walk every day. He loves walking. And that's just like something that's simple, but it's an amazing thing to do every day. I don't do it, but I you know, we have tons of trails here and tons of nice stuff to see, and Scott appreciates that. And, you know, when you've been that low, like a Jake Roberts and a Scott Hall, and you come back up, you know, it's just something that gives you a whole new perspective on life. And he's featured in The Resurrection of Jake Roberts, too. So you'll get to see the progress, the low point and the progress, the amazing progress of both these guys.
Okay. So what, you know, the Resurrection of Jake Roberts, since you guys are doing that film, you know, for him, are you guys going to eventually do one for Scott?
I'm not quite sure. I am, you know, the production team, I don't work that closely with them. They're a great team, and I'm learning a lot because I'm, like you said, I'm in the technology, so obviously I want my video editing to go up a step. But I don't know. And Scott does have a whole unique story. Everybody does in life, whether it's you guys, me, or anybody else. Everybody has their unique experience in life. So, I mean, never say never. I don't know. I don't know if it's in the plans or not.
Okay.
I'd like to see it, though, personally.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're a very busy guy doing the yoga, doing the tech.
DDP yoga. He'll kill me if you say
I'm
that.
Sorry.
DDP yoga.
DDP yoga, yes, to be clear. With your schedule now, do you have an opportunities on the weekends, or are you still doing wrestling? Are you still involved in making appearances? And are you still active in the ring, I guess I should say?
Yeah, I am. The goal of DDP, and it's a great goal, you know, because he really does care about the boys, what we call the wrestlers in the business. His goal is to have me so busy or even just so productive that I never have to ever take a bump again, which is the opposite, because every time I work, people are trying to make me take as many bumps as possible. So, you know, I love wrestling. I love it. And the fact that DDP Yoga is like it's very much like being in the wrestling business, yet the negativity and the toxicity and all the stuff that you hear about is not present here. It's like being around the boys, but everybody's truly a team. I love wrestling still. I love professional wrestling, and I still do it. As a matter of fact, I'll be up in New Jersey working a show and reuniting the BWO on January 31st. So things like that are going to be, you know, when I can pick and choose, get the BWO back together again or wrestle in the ring and have some fun, but still pass along knowledge because, you know, guys like Jake Roberts, Scott Hall, Raven, Tommy Dreamer, Paul Heyman, the list is endless. You know, Kane, there's people that people don't know about that have taught me a lot about the business throughout every company I've been in. And it's my duty to pass that along to the younger generation. So I'd be really remiss to not continue to at least be part of the wrestling business and pass along that knowledge so young guys and girls can get better.
Very, very good. And speaking of the young generation out there, can you kind of give the listeners here who might be new to the business the origins of the BWO? I mean, they know the NWO, but can you let our listeners know about the BWO, the Blue World Order?
Well, the Blue World Order was started as an obvious parody of the New World Order, and it was just another one of many things, Fabulous Ones, Baron Von Stevie and Blue Dust. Also, people don't remember the Jackson 5 that lasted for a night, but thank God it didn't make TV. Even back then in the politically incorrect times of ECW, it wouldn't have been accepted too well. New Jack loved it, but I don't think the general public would have. You know, it was just another parody. And just like anything in wrestling, this is for the young people. Just keep trying stuff. The worst thing that's going to happen is it's going to fail. But how are you going to know unless you try? We tried different stuff and just the BWO sticks. And there's still people wearing BWO shirts and the crowd at Raw and on TNA and, you know, have BWO signs. And, you know, even the NWO guys, Nash, Hall, X-Pac, and all those guys, they loved it. They were very – I was scared they wouldn't because – you never know, but they were very, very flattered by it. And these are guys making $1 million a year, so they didn't feel like, you know, us selling a few T-shirts was really going to put a dent in their contract.
Right.
You like how I'm giving you guys these segue things, too? Like, I host a podcast, so I say something about the young people, then you ask a question. And
I like that dichotomy, how that goes. Yeah, that really works.
You hope that's how it goes, right?
Right.
I wanted to ask you, Steve, I saw that you were recently back in the WWE studios. You were with Joey Styles and Blue Meanie, and looks like you guys were back to do some interviews. Was that related to the ECW DVDs that are coming out?
We actually hosted the ECW Volume 3, other ECW Unreleased Volume 3. We hosted it, so we're throughout the whole DVD.
Awesome.
There's also going to be some extras, including a blooper reel, which there's probably almost as much of those as the actual content. And we have filmed, and hopefully it will air, a BWO WWE Network special, a takeover special. So where the BWO tries, and you can guess probably fails, to take over the WWE Network. So we filmed a lot of stuff that day, and it's due out in April. So probably right after WrestleMania, we hope to have those both out there. And that's up to them, but that's the projected date right now.
Let me ask you this question. Speaking of WWE there, was there any kind of a talk about maybe in the future, maybe next year with the WWE video games? You know, 2K15 just came out, and they've already released, you know, the DLCs and all that stuff. Next year, 2K16, was there any talk about maybe the BWO being DLC in that video game?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a conversation about the ECW guys. As a matter of fact, I heard conversations when we were up there and conversations since about ECW guys being in the Royal Rumble because it's in Philadelphia.
Right.
And, you know, that would be amazing on a bunch of different levels, the most basic being that I'd get some money for cat food and video games, and that would be pretty cool.
That never hurts.
But yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, if they called, and, you know, who knows, they could probably call if they wanted to on Saturday, and they have enough money to book a flight last second for me and Meanie and Nova to come in and be in the Royal Rumble. But do I see that happening? No, I don't wait for the call, and I'm sure they don't, you know, wait for me to call them either. So it's pretty cool. I mean, the video game stuff in itself, video games and action figures, with me being in wrestling, were like two big things that, in my mind, immortalized me forever. Some guys might have different ideas, but when you have an action figure and you're in a video game and you're a nerd like me, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I remember the seeing you in the old No Mercy back in the day, WWF No Mercy.
Oh, my dad, that was my heaviest. That's like the before picture video game.
Yeah.
That's like 262 maybe, with shaved head like Johnny Unitas.
Right.
Oh my goodness.
How is the Blue Meanie doing? I know he's also lost a lot of weight. How's he doing these days?
He's doing great. He's at the Monster Factory. He's teaching and helping out there. But they also have amateur wrestlers that train there, and they have a huge old school gym. I'm sure you've seen the pictures on social media, and it's a really nice place for him to train, be accountable. And I'm sure he's not done losing the weight. And Meanie has gone back and forth with DDP Yoga, and I'm sure he said it, he loves it. But, you know, just like anybody else, you know, the guys like to lift and get big and do all that stuff. And then, unfortunately, we all get hurt, and we have to do a system like DDP Yoga in order to feel better and rehab those injuries. So he'll get back on it. When he wants to lose that last bit of weight, I know, I'm going to tell him, you have to put DDP Yoga first, and you'll drop weight in no time. And, he has to also, in my opinion, you know, really live gluten-free, dairy-free, because that kind of stuff, hell, it really makes you hold more weight than you naturally should eating that kind of food.
Very interesting. Speaking of the DDP Yoga, it was actually a question here in our discussion group. I wanted to ask you, that somebody posted, are you going to be putting out any more of the more workout routines on your YouTube channel?
Yes. I did the modification one, which, seemed to get a little bit of traction. People appreciated it. And my goal with that and every other video, because I hate, and DDP hates it too, he hates when somebody puts a video up or a workout system, and nothing against those other fitness gurus or anybody of those that puts out their workouts on DVD or on YouTube, but you make it seem so intimidating. You make it seem like you're a Superman that never feels hurt, never feels sick, never feels down, never has a bad day. And I was having a pretty damn bad day that day. And I said, you know what? My knee's killing me. My neck's killing me. I got a migraine. I got the flu. Let me do this video and tell everybody how awful I feel and how I'm going to modify, but still be successful and complete the workout. Because that's really, you can modify everything from beginning to end, guys. And I tell people that I teach, you know, in classes, modify everything at first, but just engage. Use the principles of DDP Yoga and you'll complete the workout. Feel like you succeeded. Swipe your butt off and you'll pretty much after a while feel empowered by it, if not instantly. That was the very long answer why I did that. But there will be, yes, there will be more videos.
You know, you were back in the WW studios hosting the ECW DVD. Are you kind of surprised today here in 2015, we have obviously TNA, WWE, Ring of Honor, that people still are interested in the old ECW, not the WWE ECW, but the old ECW? From back in the day.
Yeah, I'm surprised by it. We were talking about it. I think I'll probably catch some of that on the outtakes and stuff. You know, how like all these years later, people still remember the BWO. People still remember, you know, people still remember to write the censor from that era too, because that's what I get recognized for both. You know, I have long hair and I look different, but, you know, when people see my hair back, they're like, you're that guy with the white shirt and the tie. And that was in 2000, and that only lasted barely a year if you think about it. That kind of stuff is just, I think today, and it's not, these guys work their butts off. They work so hard, and everybody from top to bottom tries their best. But I really think that it's so structured now and so corporate that you can't just throw it out there and see what happens. It has to be so controlled, and that's to protect the company. WWE, TNA could be a little more free with it, but it doesn't feel like they do that. It feels like they're trying to be structured too. And I think back then it was just like, hey, go out there, and if you fail, it's your fault. If you don't get over, it's your fault, you know, and that's dangerous and scary and all, but also freeing, and sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle. The entire Attitude Era was basically guys just going out there really being themselves and really going out there and saying, let's just try this. You know, New Age Outlaws is a great example. Those guys are going out with South Park shirts, doing this and that, and people still remembered them. They were just on Raw, and people gave them a great response. But you couldn't wear a South Park shirt on WWE today, because then we'd talk about sponsors and we don't get money from them and all that stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they'll blur it out. It's kind of like right now in the with the WWE Network, and majority all DVDs that WWE produces that has to do with ECW, a lot of the music you guys used back in the day is dubbed over.
Oh, yeah. That's even, you know, even the BWO music, which is original music and not commercial music by the Swamp Candles, they have to, there's, you know, you have to do it. You have to protect your intellectual property. You got to protect your brand. There, you know, music and all that stuff is a huge part of that. And we would have never had ECW if, never had ECW so current and so cool if we didn't, if Paul didn't essentially steal the music.
Right, and I totally understand that, but me being a fan, it's like I was watching the ECW Hardcore TV episode the other day when you debuted Raven, and when Raven came out, the Offspring came on, Come Out and Play. Well, Come Out and Play is not playing; it's some generic crap that they put over it, and it, to me, it just killed the whole scene.
It's the most generic. Everybody's got the most generic guitar riff with a little bit of drums in it. The sound's not even played off. It's like everybody's coming out to like the dark match music before, like, you know, like, what was the name of that? So everybody had like a Machine Head type entrance music if they were at the dark match, before Raw and SmackDown. It was so funny. But yeah, that was something that at least, you know, and they would have to pay for that. And the network's already having trouble getting the subscriber base that they need. They don't need to lay any more money out and have any more overhead.
And why do you think that they're having a problem getting the subscribers that they need? I mean, they have a
lot of...
Because
they don't limit... The number one reason is the same reason that they don't follow the model that Apple does with iTunes, that even Netflix follows now, and anything else. They do not limit the number of devices you can have on an account. They would have well over 1 million subscribers. Because I know people that have 15, 20 people on their account.
Wow.
I brought it up,
wow.
Joey Styles, you know, and I don't know I would have that in place. I don't know. See, I'm a tech guy, but I don't know how the infrastructure works on that end and how they would have to protect the accounts or limit the accounts. I would figure it would just be a switch or something that you can program into the app or anything else from Stanford or from whatever server they're using. I think they're using the MLB servers or something, which there is a limit on the MLB.tv thing. You can only use it on a certain amount of devices, I believe.
I've never heard that. I mean, we've interviewed a couple people, Steve, and we've talked about the network, but I've never heard it from that point of view before as far as multiple devices playing a role in their subscriptions, and that's very interesting.
It's an amazing product. I mean, they make a joke and a meme out of it with the $9.99 a month. But my God, I mean, I thought when the network started that it was the greatest idea ever because, and people crap on it and say Vince was stupid. Listen, when you really break it down, $9.99 a month, which is $120 a year, that's basically WrestleMania and maybe one or two other pay-per-views, and you get every single thing pretty much ever that ever happened in wrestling, and it keeps getting added on. Obviously, they're not going to throw it all at once, that they're going to stagger it. But think about the content that you get. I mean, I watch it every – when I do cardio in the morning or if I'm, you know, somewhere where I have internet or in a hotel, you know, I'll relive my childhood by watching matches from the 80s, or I love documentaries. So all the stuff that they have documentary-wise, just it's produced so well. And that's what I would give them advice on, that you need to limit the number of devices. I think $10 a month is a hell of a deal and cheap. And they've already given me my check for the DVD, so I'm not kissing their ass to try to get a check out.
Right.
I got
Are you
that
shilling for them? No, come on.
Does that make sense?
Oh,
and that's true.
Absolutely.
Sometimes people, consumers in general, not wrestling fans, consumers in general are just spoiled, and they, sometimes nothing will ever make them happy.
That's an interesting perspective, because obviously Frank and I have debated this quite a while here on our podcast. We just feel like it's missing a lot of the essential content. I mean, you talk about there is a lot of shows on there, there's a lot of pay-per-views, but, you know, you talked about the edits of the music. It kind of kills its original feel of watching some of the shows. A lot of the Nitros are not there. Some of the old Raws are not there. And I know you don't want to put everything all on at once, but I just feel like it's just missing some of the core content. I mean, I subscribed to it for a while, and then I let my subscription expire, and I came back, and they had Primetime Wrestling. I went in to watch it, He had three episodes. I'm thinking, where is the essential primetime wrestling episode? It was the Bobby Heenan when he just first came on the show when he was taking over for Jesse.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, where is some of the primetime wrestling that I remember?
The probably Jesse thing has to do with that royalty lawsuit, I would guess. That's my educated guess on that.
Well, actually, I don't think that has anything to do with it. I just think that they haven't gotten around to just uploading the rest of that stuff because Jesse's content, or you know, his comments are all over the network. It's like all those Saturday Night's Main Events are up there, and they all have Jesse.
Oh, okay.
Commentary.
All right, I haven't started watching those yet. I'm trying to be very pragmatic with my approach, not binge watch like I do Netflix. Well, here's the thing: if you don't like it, or if it's not, it's a consumer market, so just don't get it. Go to YouTube. Watch. I mean, I watch old stuff on YouTube, and that's free. The thing I would say though is that Vince has always been very forward thinking, whether it's a positive or a negative. And the a la carte on demand thing is something I'm praying for when it comes to cable or satellite. If I have cable like Comcast or anything like that, all I need is NFL Network, ESPN, and maybe one of the documentary channels, even if that, because everything else I get off Netflix and the and YouTube. So if I got to the NFL Network when NFL Red Zone and I had the ESPN stuff, all my sports that I love are covered. And that's really why sports are the one thing that people keep their $100 cable subscriptions for. Am I wrong?
No.
Lot of it's live sports. That's what you want to watch. So Vince is forward thinking with, he's the really the first one to come out with an a la carte product and almost on the surface cannibalize his own product to take that chance. I mean, he lost hundreds of millions of dollars in one day.
During the summer, I was a subscriber to DirecTV for 10 years, and I gave it up because I was paying $100 a month, and I'm paying for all these channels I don't watch. As you were saying, all I need is the NFL ticket or the NFL Network, ESPN, the ESPN channels for the college football, and as you said, you know, maybe a couple other channels, but they don't offer it that way. So I was getting tired of that $100 a month, and I gave it up.
And
so,
that's what's going to change the landscape when you and whoever else and everybody else say this is not the model we want anymore. Then they're going to be forced to change it. That's all on a larger scale rather than we're supposed to do just a wrestling interview here. But now we're talking about the future of media delivery.
but we talk about all these issues
on here.
Exactly. But you're right there. It is changing. I mean, myself, I have the lowest package they have on Charter. Because I don't watch TV. I have, you know, the Netflix, I have WWE Network, I have the Amazon Prime, I got the Redbox, you know, on the PlayStation Network. TV's changed now. You know, when Sons of Anarchy went off the air for me, that was it. You know, and then I have Gotham now, but that's pretty much the only shows I watch. I'm not going to watch TNA, so that ain't going to happen.
Here's the point of that. The thing that needs to happen more so than on the cable side, Internet needs to be universally faster in this country. Most countries in the world have very, very fast internet. I had Google Fiber where I lived last. It's amazing. And then it doesn't matter if everything's streaming. You need the bandwidth. You need the pipe to be able to stream it and not be like, oh, my God, this is a nightmare. I'm just going to get cable. That's what needs to happen.
Right. And who has the fastest internet right now in the world, you think?
I heard, oh, my God, I think it's somewhere in Europe. I think it's off country like Denmark or something or Switzerland. You know, even the Asian countries have very fast internet or they have no internet. I believe I could swear it's like Norway or Denmark or something like that in Europe. I mean, I had 200 megs up and down wireless with Google Fiber consistently. I would upload my YouTube videos, my tech videos, which were like half a gig in like 20 seconds.
Damn.
Wired, I was getting full gig up and down. Yeah, it was
100
crazy.
Megs.
200 megs wireless.
Wow.
I like drop my coffee. The whole scene dropping your coffee cup on the floor, it shatters and your mouth just drops and drools comes down. And
yeah.
That was all bad.
Yeah, I bet.
Back to wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that was our cue, Frank. Back to wrestling. So,
no, I'm not cue you guys because we're like, okay, that's cool, but no, I don't think anybody gives a damn about that anymore.
People should give a damn about it because it's the business has changed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you put it in wrestling in perspective, that has changed because WWE sees that. Like you said there, Vince has always been a smart thinker. He sees where the business is going as far as like, okay, they're still on some pay-per-view markets, but majority of it is they're pushing the network. They're pushing the over-the-top you know, streaming situation, and that's where it's going. So technology plays a huge part right now in the wrestling business.
Yeah, I mean, Vince and even Triple H get a bad rap, and they need to be the bad guys at times. But, you know, let's segue over to this. You're talking about young people before. So I think the best product that WWE puts out, surprisingly to most people maybe, is NXT. It's great. I love watching it. And if you want something that actually gives you episodic content every week on a live basis, NXT puts their episodes up on the WWE Network, and their takeover pay-per-views are probably some of my favorite pay-per-views wrestling-wise, because I believe, you know, we got sports entertainment, but I think NXT is the wrestling product that WWE is putting out.
Well, I tend to agree with that, and I was not a NXT fan at first. It took me a while, but now I'm a fan, and I know a lot of the guys on the show now, and that what changed for me was that last, especially our Evolution takeover.
Yeah, that's like after. A free preview or pay. It's a pay per view, but it's free.
Yeah.
You subscribe to the network, and that was a great pay per view from top to bottom. Had a great feel. The crowds are hotter, one would say there, but it's also more controlled. They're more emotionally invested in the wrestlers or the sports entertainers, whatever to call them there. But yeah, I love it. I mean, one of my favorite guys to watch, and obviously it's because he's a cat lover too. That's another segue. Is Tyson Kidd. You know, he beat me to the punch by putting cats on his kick pads, son of a bitch. I was getting a maid, and I saw it on Raw, and I'm like, oh, man, forget it now.
But it's funny you mention that. You know, the crowd is more, you know, emotionally invested in the characters down there, in the talent, because they do it down there. For people out there who don't know, you should know, unless you're living under a rock, that NXT is actually filmed at Full Sail University in Florida. And TNA was filmed in Orlando at Universal Studios. And, you know, you worked there, Stevie. How was that working in front of the crowd at the Impact Zone?
It was good. See, when I came in, here's the thought. I was Stevie Richards for so long. I wasn't exactly portrayed in a impactful light my last few years in WWE. So I wanted to recreate myself. I never wanted to go back to being Stevie Richards again. I wanted this new character to act like he never existed before. So they came up with Dr. Stevie and the Abyss Therapist gimmick, and it was great because from the ground up, I just wanted to be a heel. And I believe in that environment, going back to the people, because it's a very controlled environment, they actually ushered those people in and tried to get them in from the park. So they weren't really wrestling fans, but I was like, man, this is a great challenge to get these people that never heard of me or anybody else here probably, that you know, get them to hate me so they can love Abyss. And I was successful with that. And this is a crowd that's basically almost like a captive audience. Jim Cornette talked about how, like, you know, they didn't pay to get in, but they tried to pay to get out, which is stiff. But, you know, not necessarily true. But, yeah, I mean, the crowd there, it was tough to get them in there because they weren't essentially there to see the show for the most part. They were just there in the park, but also created a great controlled atmosphere for setup, breakdown, production, and a regular schedule where we were at. You know, we had pretty much the sound studio, which is essentially already built up for the TV, so you don't have to break it down and pay people to do all this stuff or anything like that. So it was beneficial, but I think you had to take it on the road. Dixie, even though it was the wrong move financially, it was the right move creatively to take it on the road, because where else could you do it? In Orlando, what else could you do? Those people were spoiled. They were stale. They didn't see anything new, and they didn't care if they were in the park and weren't wrestling fans anyway.
I understand that to a certain degree, as far as you know, going different places. But you know, the thing, like you just said there, it was not a smart move financially, but it was a smart move creatively. My thing is that how come TNA didn't venture out in other parts of Florida and kind of stayed in there in that comfort zone where they necessarily didn't have to spend that much money in travel and in production? They could just go to one of the smaller towns in Florida and do a live broadcast of Impact from that point.
Well, yeah. I mean, financially at its core, TNA did a lot of things to spend. You know, they were sort of penny wise, pound foolish. They sort of looked at the wrong things to cut. I was always under you know, and I was considered, and for some reason, to be an old guy there too, compared to the other guys that were there. But she would spend tons of money on these names And then the young guys weren't even making a living. They'd had to have jobs outside of TNA. And I'm talking about these X Division guys that are amazing, that at a time, I would say, was the identity of TNA, more so than the heavyweight guys. I watched the X Division guys. I watched the AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Sabin, Shelley, Low Key, all these guys, Jerry Lynn in the beginning. These guys were like everything that WWE wasn't doing at the time. And now WWE sort of embraced an X Division type thing, especially in NXT, if you look at it. They're bringing up guys that aren't monsters, and they're doing it right. That's something that, once I said that, and for better or for worse, the six-sided ring makes us different. Stick with it, run with it, and use the Hulk Hogan's and all these guys and everything to draw the people in, but use the young talent to make them stay.
You know, in terms of today's product, WWE, Raw, SmackDown, TNA, does your schedule allow you to actually watch what's currently going on? Do you spend time watching Raw, SmackDown? And
you're talking about the current schedule I have now?
Yeah, with your current schedule, I mean, it must be insane. But do you find time to watch the current shows? And just overall, what's your opinion of today's products?
If I'm doing cardio, I watch WWE Network. And people have accused me of doing a lot of cardio. So I don't go out of my way to watch it. And I don't want to sound like one of those guys. It's just I'm a huge football fan. So when Monday Night Football's on, that's what I watch. I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
I'm just
Monday night, I would rather watch football. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're so invested, and you guys do these podcasts, you have Jeff Jarrett coming up after me, so you're putting all this time in. The last thing you want to do after all of that is be so connected. I'm going to listen to 5 or 6 wrestling podcasts after we do one with Stevie and one with Jeff Jarrett, right? You're gonna say, okay, I like football, so I'm going to watch a football life. I'm going to watch this other stuff and kind of disconnect from that so I'm fresh when I come back into it.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, I have always been a big NFL fan, college football, but back in the Monday Night War era, I was watching wrestling on Monday nights. Now in today's era, and it's been like this for a decade now, Monday night comes in the fall, I'm watching football. I'm not watching wrestling. And there's just been nothing that really clicks – storylines, characters, promos, nothing's really clicking. And I'm watching the ratings decline. And, you know, I could be a shill and come out here and say that I think everything's great in wrestling, everything's cool, I'm looking forward to Royal Rumble, etc. But, you know, that would compromise my opinion. And I've been covering wrestling for a long time, and it gets frustrating. And I know you did an interview, I heard you say, for the wrestling fans out there complaining on social media, you know, don't watch it. Well, I have to watch it. To a certain degree, I have to follow what's going on, but it gets hard. I mean, it's like a job anymore to really watch Raw and SmackDown religiously, and it's just frustrating that it could be so much better. I guess the question here would be, do you feel like the PG era, the gearing the show to 13-year-old kids, is really hurting the product and just not clicking with everyday wrestling fans out there?
Well, I heard they were gonna get rid of the PG rating coming up. I heard a rumor, they were talking about it here at the crib yesterday, that there was something going on where they were going to go back up to a PG-13 or go back up to what was close to what the Attitude Era was. I don't know. That's just a rumor, but it's weird. I just heard that yesterday, and I don't know. Here's the thing. It's money. It's money, money, money. Cena sells a ton of merchandise, and those kids, much like, you know, we see the thing with the big thing with Hunter breaking kayfabe, as we used to say back in the day, and console that kid in the crowd that was crying during Raw. And some people are making a big deal out of it in a negative way, and some people are like, that's pretty much, people know we're entertainment. So how far do we take it too? Now let me back it up. How far do we take it? Because society's so desensitized too. Do we go back to crash and burn TV where guys are getting hurt and it's so dangerous? And these guys, you know, back in the Attitude Era, that's why the right to censor came along. It's actually an underlying reason was to protect the talent. I mean, obviously we were trying to get the sponsors back too and really tone the product down, but Vince wanted to protect it because how many guys were getting hurt with the hardcore stuff, with all this crazy stuff we were doing? We had to dial it back. So you run the risk when you're saying, okay, let's go back to that stuff. People might say, I don't know, this isn't, I see this on, you know, the TV shows at night, the sex and the where do you go to shock people again? It's a question I don't have the answer to.
Right.
I don't necessarily need to see the sex, but I just like more edgier characters. Like we had D'Lo Brown on this podcast, and he said there's nothing PG about wrestling. I mean, two guys that want to physically hurt each other, there's nothing PG about it.
I agree with that. You're actually saying like we're engaging in violence, which is not PG. It's PG-13 or whatever you want to rate it, depending upon the violence. You got a great point there. And then you're just like, you're telling the people we're making pretend, but we get hurt at the same time. But we're not, it's not really real, but we're fictional characters, but there's real people attached to those physical characters that really get hurt. So don't try it at home. It's a tightrope, man. I don't have the answer. If I had the answer, I'd be telling my secretary at Titan Towers to take a message for you when you call me for the podcast.
Right. It's kind of a hypocritical thing, right?
It's not a hypocritical thing. It's a very, this is why, you know what I think wrestling should go back to? Let's maybe agree on this answer. It's not the variety show it used to be. It's too cookie cutter.
Yep.
That could be a good first step right there.
I tend to agree with that. I mean, I watch the NXT show and I see, I see Prince Devitt, Finn Balor come out there and look completely different than anybody else that's on the main roster. And that's just what it was. I mean, everybody on Raw, to me, is just the same. There is nothing that stands out anymore. I mean, back in the day, during the Monday Night War, you had people that stood out. I mean, you and Raven stood out in ECW and then later WCW with, the grunge look you guys are doing with the Flock. That stood out. NWO stood out. DX stood out. The Nation of Domination stood out. But nowadays, it's all the same. I mean, this is John Cena cookie cutter baby face and Randy Orton doing the gimmick. I don't know what it is supposed to be. It's just the same thing, man.
Yeah, and this is essentially, too, a lot of guys aren't allowed to be themselves.
Right.
They just go out there because really it is, you hear this thing, it's me, but the volume's turned way up. Well,
right.
I don't talk, and I'm not going to say you, Steve Gerwick, and me, Stevie Richards, are going to go out there and you, and then say your name 15 times. What I call pre-tapees. It's a language where you say the person's name 100 times to their face like they have Alzheimer's or something and keep forgetting it. And that's what makes it go sort of like, oh, okay. Instead of you looking at these two guys talking and saying something where essentially wrestling is, when someone does something or when someone's doing something, it causes you to ask a question. Like, man, I wonder what happens next, or what's he doing, or who's this guy? I got to stay, to see who this guy is and what he's all about. Wrestling these days, what I see is we actually just shove the answer down your throat before you even ask the question.
Yeah.
And that could be another thing. Suspense, mystique, all this stuff are, I think, not missing but very much lacking across the board.
I wanted to ask you about the Extreme Rising. How was it for you when you won the Extreme Rising championship? Because from what I watched your career, you were never really given the ball in any federation. So how was that for you being that champion?
It was great, and it was bittersweet, obviously, with what followed. But I thought we were doing some great stuff. I thought when they gave me, the opportunity to prove myself with that. And really, it was funny because I always towed the line. I always just kind of, okay, I'll be the good employee. But I put that promo up, and people can find it up there on the Extreme Rising or Extreme Reunion YouTube channel, where I 100% just did a shoot, and said, all right, this is bullshit, and this is this, and Raven and Shane Douglas, who were very visibly mad at me when I saw them, I basically told the truth and said, this is crazy. And from that point on, it actually, that boosted me and put me on the path to the tournament and becoming the champion. So I took that chance and I said, whatever. I thought I was going to have to fight both those guys. I thought that the company would say, no, you can't say that, and never publish the video. And they did. So I think that's what really, by taking that chance and speaking my mind, and like we said, that was me talking as Michael Manna, and that was me with the volume turned way up and being, I'm going to show you how mad I am, and I'm going to express it in this promo, and it connected with the fans. And by getting that, obviously, if you look at it skeptically, it was probably the safe choice, too, when you were looking at the other talent, saying, well, Stevie's in shape. He's in really good shape. He can have good matches. And he's actually going to show up, and he's not going to show up all messed up, but I feel like that's a good role model for the young guys, too. You can be a hard worker, be clean, take your job seriously, and be in a position to succeed.
You know, you were talking about right to censor. It was a segue, I guess, to tone down some of the things they were doing in WWE. When they first told you about right to censor and you'd be part of the group, what did you think of that group? Because I know it was greeted with a lot of negativity. Some people didn't think, you know, very highly of those characters of that faction. Did you think it would get over as it did? And I guess in reflecting on our, you know, looking back at that group, what's your overall impression of how it came out?
Actually, people now say they make jokes about how we won. I always get tweets like that, and, hey, you finally won, and
That's
all
right.
That stuff. And it's really... You know, one of those things, too, that people remembered. Like I said, it was less than a year, and that's not a lot of time in the wrestling business to be on TV, and people remember that. I look back on it, and I think the person that really made it even last that year was the writer Jamie Morris. He was a writer on Raw at that time, and he wrote for it, and he was on SmackDown, I believe, too, but he wrote stuff, and we both wrote stuff together, like promo-wise and everything, that converted just the right to censor from just basically a playoff of the parent television council, because that was the initial problem, was PTC, RTC. They were basically trying to shut down and make the advertisers go away from WWE. At the time, WWF, I believe, wasn't WWE yet. So Jamie and I said, this could be like a thing that Vince looks at, and he says, 3 weeks, I'm going to shove it up their ass and then forget about these guys. How can we turn this from a political faction into a cult? And I believe that's the impression people were getting after a while. This is not, has nothing to do with politics. This is a cult. This is like very David Koresh type stuff and propaganda and trying to brainwash people. And that really gave it a lot more lasting power than it should have had.
Yeah, I actually use the Right to Censor's annoying theme song as my alarm clock on my cell phone when I get up.
Nice. That'll get you up. That'll definitely help. I have a question for you guys, though, real quick. Your opinion, last year I had shorter hair, so this year it wouldn't work necessarily. What kind of reaction do you think the crowd would have if at the Royal Rumble that siren went off and we all came down, or just me or whatever, in the white shirt and tie? I bet you people would boo it, because at a raw nerve, that sound, you can't forget what it is and who it's for.
I think people would probably pop for that. I think
you would get cheered.
Yeah, I think
you would
pop. Yeah, honestly, and especially if you go out there and say, like Monday night with the Wolfpack out there, you had APA, you had the Outlaw. So yeah, if Steven Richards decides to come out at the Royal Rumble with the Right to Censor playing, and he's talking about all the bad things going on in WWE today, which aren't many, that would be, I think that would be kind of cool personally. Because like I said, I use that music every day for my ringtone.
The funny thing is, if I would say you're welcome for the fact that we gave you John Cena and all the bright colors and all the great stuff. Philadelphia probably would boo, I would think.
Philadelphia would hate, yes. Speaking of Philly real quick, I got another question for you. Returning to the ECW arena, and as the Extreme Rising Champion, you face Steve Carino. How was that for you to go back there and be inside the ECW arena as a champ?
It was good, but I don't feel me and Steve had a really good match. It was okay. Steve's a great heel, cuts a great promo, and he can work a very old school type of match, and that's not a bad thing. He knows how to work, and I enjoyed working with him. I just feel like we should have had. He was a surprise guy. Surprise opponent, but I feel like, looking back with the promo in the beginning and all, it kind of disconnected people and we had to work extra hard. But we could have had a good series of matches and told a story. That's probably would have been a strength rather than just a one-off thing. So got a great reaction. I wasn't in the shape I wanted to be in. I didn't feel good about the way I looked. And it was just one of those things where we all have that roller coaster in our fitness level. And if it was today, I'd feel a lot better. Like I felt a lot better going into the House of Hardcore 7 and wrestling Danny Doring in the first match. I felt great about that because I felt better about the way I looked.
Speaking of the ECW arena, as a person who I watched ECW back in the day, do you think that maybe now it's like, we have the ECW one night stand, you know, WWE brought the brand back, their version of it, I should say. And then you have the TNA presented the Hardcore Justice, and you guys actually had a faction over at TNA for a while. You were battling, I think it was Immortal or something like that.
Fortune. Four Horsemen type thing, yeah.
Right. So do you think that maybe it's a little too much now? Like, you know, the nostalgia factor is probably kind of worn itself in?
Yeah, on a brand level, on an entire show level, but there's still a place for it. There's
right.
still, I believe, a place for a few ECW guys to come out as surprise entrants in the Royal Rumble. I feel like if WrestleMania was in Philadelphia, embrace the ECW brand and have guys sign autographs or participate in some sort of thing at WrestleMania. Those kind of things where you were, it's a special attraction type thing now.
Right.
And even though I could still wrestle and still, you know, try my best to hang with the guys in NXT and have great matches and stuff, it's about the future. And it's about us as if ECW is a legacy or a brand that can help the younger talent, that's what it was all about. So that's how it would be featured to really help give credibility to somebody that doesn't have as much as they should at that time.
What are your overall impressions of TNA? Obviously, you left there a couple of years ago. I believe you said, I left because I couldn't get a working wage there.
True.
Just overall impressions of the management style, behind the scenes, what's going on. And do you think now that they've moved over to Destination America, they're ever really going to click with wrestling fans out there?
I have no idea. There's a smaller audience with Destination America, but I heard it was their highest rated show, the first one, which is curiosity. But people, you have to turn curiosity into repeat
loyal
viewership.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everybody's curious about the first episode of Gotham, or the first episode of The Flash or Arrow. But what are we doing, you know, a couple seasons later, or three seasons later with Arrow, couple with Flash, Gotham is quite a few episodes in. I'm more interested in both of those now than the first one. That's what you need to do in wrestling. You need to become invested. And it takes 6 months with a character, with a whole show and a whole channel. I hope they, you know, I heard they're very high on TNA, so hopefully they'll give them a couple seasons, because they really need to do that. I mean, I look back, I'm a Star Trek guy, I'm a Trekker. The Next Generation didn't even appeal to me, and I was a Trekkie before that. The Next Generation didn't even appeal to me until after season 3, because now I know the characters, I'm invested, and they got the production down for the shows. So management-wise, I wasn't too crazy about it outside of Terry Taylor when I was there and left in 2011. You still have the same owner, so that's something that needs to be said for bad, good, indifferent. And as far as the management, I'm not familiar with it. It's made so many changes right now. I think the guy from Tough Enough, John, is running everything now. So I can't speak on his management style at all.
Yeah, I heard you say the same typical line of Dixie Carter. She's a nice person, but everybody seems to say that. And
I got a lot of heat for calling her. I didn't say she was one. They're treating me like a money mark. I had a shoot interview where I said that she's just a money mark to these guys. And really, when you look at it, it's always the battle between the boys and the promoters. The promoters are by, what's the Jim Cornette line? He's one of my favorite guys to listen to. You know, the promoters always say, we're going to throw this money up in the air, and whatever sticks to the ceiling or stays in the air is for the boys, and whatever hits the ground is for the promoter.
Right.
You know, it's always that battle. But, you know, I don't fault Hogan and Bischoff or anybody else for getting all their money. I just think that I would have preferred to see her pay, and I'm not talking about me, even though I worked and earned it, to have that living wage or better, but those guys that were there from day one, the Sabins, the Shelleys, when Low-Key was there, all those guys who left, came back, or just left, it was mostly because TNA didn't pay their medical bills when Sabin blew his knee out or other guys got hurt, or just like, man, I just need to make more money. And this regular job pays me more than the thing that I'm on TV and pay-per-view every month. It's pretty much a practical solution. These guys didn't give up on wrestling. You know, and those young guys, I got to keep saying it, they are the reason why people started watching and continued to watch TNA. The X Division or the X Division style is something that truly could have made TNA revolutionary and continued to be revolutionary throughout the years.
Do you think that I know exactly what you're talking about. The X Division at one point was more credible than the heavyweight division in TNA. I know for a fact during the NWA TNA days, especially. But do you think
and
that
Jeff was smart enough? Just quick point, Jeff Jarrett, you'll talk to him. He was smart enough to put the X Division match on last, and I believe he said to them, "It's going to be the best match of the night, so we need to put it on last." And that's, you know what I mean? He's a good businessman to say that.
Why do you feel, though, that TNA, I mean, you mentioned earlier that shows need a couple seasons for people to catch on. Well, TNA had, you know, over 10 years.
I'm talking about on this network.
On this network, okay,
fresh. Let's start over fresh. I would have just started over fresh and reintroduced everybody as if nobody ever saw them before.
Right, so you're just like pretty much what they did was pretty much just a reboot. Because there were several reboots of TNA over the years on Spike.
But they never rebooted the actual, like, who's this guy? What is he? Who is he? What? And then stick with it.
Yeah.
Their reboots were always production or we're bringing in the quick fix or this is going to change the face of wrestling forever this month. That was my favorite saying for a while.
Right.
Because it's not bad. It's never a quick fix with wrestling. It wasn't for, hey, when Vince was getting his ass kicked by WCW, who basically just bought their ratings, and they did a great job, and they had a great product. Vince had to stay the course, and how long did the Attitude Era have to, there's that episode on the network, Building an Army. It took at least months for people to connect with The Rock, to connect with Stone Cold, The Outlaws, AP, all these guys, it was over the course of years, actually, if you think about it, to really bring them up to a point of being mainstream stars.
Right. I want to ask you, how is your relationship today with Raven? And how you compare the relationship today with Raven versus the relationship you had with him back in ECW, WCW?
I'd have to say it's a complete 180. The relationship I have with him back then has been documented that, you know, I was a young, immature kid. He was nowhere near the role model that I needed or the mentor that I needed. He was actually the one I needed, not the one I wanted, because he taught me. I would not be here talking about all the stuff we just talked about or had the knowledge about everything that I have about the business part or anything about psychology if it wasn't for Raven. He was the number one reason that, you know, I really came along as a worker, not a wrestler, but as a worker with psychology and learned the business. So, you know, and we're really good friends today. I haven't heard from him in a little bit, which is kind of like a rib on me because I probably live 10 minutes from him right now.
Wow.
So, you know, I really want to reconnect with him. I'd love to get him on DDP Yoga. I'd love, because I know he has injuries. I know he's probably banged up just like every other professional athlete, and I want to return the favor to him. And if you're listening, Raven, the offer is always open, man. I love you. And if you want, I will go to your place or anything like that or anywhere you want, and I will take you through DDP yoga workouts every day, and it will still be a small repayment for what you've done to me. So put that out there in the podcasting universe.
Very good.
Now, I'm a cat fan. How many cats do you currently have?
None right now. Once I get my own place, I'll be a foster, and I'm looking for places around here to help with charities. I work with one called Show Your Soft Side. We do a lot of different stuff, and any animal rescue place that wants to contact me, and I'd be happy to help you raise money. I'd be happy to do an autograph session, give you a bunch of 8x10s, raise money any way that you want. Just contact me, stevie@ddpyoga.com. I will never turn down an opportunity to help some animals get rescued, saved, adopted, anything like that, especially cats. I love cats.
Very cool. I agree. I do too. Now, as we wrap up here, go ahead and plug your social media, your tech show, your podcast, and anything you want to put over, any upcoming appearances you might have.
Sure. You know what? I just basically put everything under one umbrella now. So at realstevierichards.com, you have the P4 show videos, which stands for Tech Today, Tech Tomorrow. Also the P4 show podcast. You can also subscribe to iTunes from each episode. It has a subscribe and iTunes link. And also we're going to start a Cribcast. So basically everybody from the DDP Yoga team is going to do a podcast. Everybody here is very interesting, has great talents. So if you want like pop culture, entertainment, also some technology, because a lot of video production goes on here. So a wealth of knowledge that I'm going to ask these guys about. We just had Jake Roberts on talking about the NFL playoffs, which his predictions, if you go to realstevierichards.com and go to the Cribcast one under DDP Yoga, it's amazing. He was right on about Peyton Manning and everything else. He was like, he knows football. It's crazy how knowledgeable Jake is about that. So we're going to have him on, Scott Hall, everybody on that. So make sure you subscribe to that. Also has my wrestling matches, and we just talked about it, any animal rescue stuff that's going on has its own page on realstevierichards.com.
Well, you know, quickly, Peyton Manning, I mean, what, the losingest quarterback now in NFL history? It didn't
NFL
really go out on a
playoff
limb on that
quarterback
one.
In history, not the losingest.
There you go. Okay, yeah. Losingest NFL quarterback in playoff history.
Is he?
So,
well, he is. The Brady's,
I believe he's got 13 losses now in the playoffs.
Yes, he has at least a dozen, but
so
he's been to the playoffs.
That's true. That's well said. Well, Stevie, thank you so much. We definitely appreciate it. I know Frank D and I really enjoyed it, and we'll definitely hook up again for part two.
All right. Have a good day. Tell Jeff Jarrett to try and do more cardio than me. I dare him.
If you enjoyed today's Gerwick Report podcast, we encourage you to go to gerwick.net at www.gerweck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. You can also find all the archives of previous editions of the Gerwick Report podcast there. Additionally, check out our Facebook discussion group at facebook.com/groups/Gerwick Report. We're on Twitter at Gerwick Report. You can follow us on YouTube, our YouTube channel at Gerwick Report on YouTube. Find us on Stitcher, on Spreaker, on TuneIn, and on Blog Talk Radio. Check us out on Instagram, and we appreciate your support here at Gerwick.net and the Gerwick Report podcast. Again, check out all your wrestling news at Gerwick.net, and stay tuned for the next edition of the Gerwick Report podcast.